Well, it is a privilege and a joy to be here as we celebrate the 75th anniversary of Fruitland Covenant Church, to be a part of that legacy, some of which you've heard. As Garth has shared some of that history, if you've seen people up here who've been part of the church, and there are many others who are around here who have been part of the church, maybe some for a few months, some since the very beginning. And so I encourage you over the time, over this morning, to take time to share stories. We'll have time after the service when there's some coffee and cookies. There'll be some time between that and between our dinner. You'll see slideshows, but get a chance to talk to folks. Maybe ask them how they came to Fruitland Covenant Church. Ask them how Fruitland Covenant Church has been a part of their growth and their life with Jesus Christ and how that's changed. One of the things I've enjoyed as in preparing for the 75th anniversary was reading a little bit more about the history, learning a little bit more about this congregation and its history. And I discovered that sometimes you think you know everything and then you don't. Or sometimes we think we know the story and we realize there's more to the story. And that could be in part our lesson for this morning, is to realize there is often more to the story than we realize. You may have noticed when we were singing that medley of songs that was put together, there were dates next to them at the anniversary. And one of those dates was the Fruitland Mission Society, the date 1944. And you think, wait a minute, I thought the church was chartered in 1949. Well, that was kind of what I had in my head, too. I knew some of the basic backstory that a man named Harold Young had gathered together with people from what was then Muskegon Covenant Church, now Forest Park Covenant Church, and met with the youth in this community to reach out to them and to share with them on Sundays. But then I was digging through some file drawers looking for some more information. I came across this tiny little three-ring binder. It was about this big, a smaller three-ring binder, and I opened it up, and there were these brittle pages inside of it. And the first ones were typed, little tiny sheets, you know, typed, and you could see the lines weren't always quite straight and stuff. And it was a meeting that took place in 1944. And I started flipping through these, and it was a group of women and the pastor and some others who met together. And after a couple of meetings, they named themselves the Fruitland Mission Society. And it talked about the meeting in the church. And I started thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. I thought the church started in 1949, but the date at the top was clearly 1944. And it wasn't a typo on the first page, because it was like that after every page. And there were the type pages, and then there were some handwritten pages. And it went for probably about 7 or 8 years worth of those. I didn't read all of those. But it was this fascinating story of these people that got together. And so I started looking a little more, and I found another little clipping from was called the Covenant Gazette. It was the publication of the Evangelical Covenant Church many years ago. And it was a picture, looks a lot like the picture. There's a picture when you go up into the church and as you enter the door towards the gym, if you turn to the right on the wall, there's a large picture of a huge group of kids. And there's that picture and there's a little bit of the story in there. And then the story underneath that picture talks about how there had been a church founded by this group of Swedes in Muskegon. And then that church closed. And I don't know the exact dates. I don't know the timeline of that. But then later on, Harold Young and these group, all these people gathered together and they met together and they brought all these kids together and eventually families together and started what we now know as Fruitland Covenant Church in 1949. And I got to read through the history and see that over the years, there's been a lot gone on and been done through this church by God. We've sent missionaries. We've supported missionaries all around the world through the covenant. We have sent kids to camp. We've hosted kids here for vacation Bible schools and all sorts of other events. We've seen people come to know Jesus. We've baptized people, whether in the baptistry here or down at Duck Lake. We've seen people growing in Christ through Sunday schools and through Wednesday Bible studies and through all sorts of other events. We fed the community through a food pantry, through food trucks, all sorts of other ministries. And the ministries have changed over the years and the faces have changed, but the same thing has continued and continues still today in 2024. In fact, the Ziegelbauers, the Ron and Janet Ziegelbauer, whom we supported for many years, just recently retired. Our support with them ended on July 31st, but there's a new couple, the Hernandezes, that work and have a totally different kind of ministry. You've heard about Ron and Janet and their work with missionary kids in a school and Ron's work in teaching people and building and stuff. The Hernandez, they do rap music and all kinds of great, and it's a totally different style, but it's the work of Jesus Christ around the world. It's the whole mission of the whole church working together. We still continue to see kids growing and living. You heard about these kids, and one of the great things this church does is make sure that kids who want to go to camp get to go to camp. And so a number of years ago, before my day, they started this crazy thing called the No Talent Show, where people get together and they show off their talent or their lack of talent, where we auction off pies and people buy $200, $300, $400 for a pecan pie so that kids can go to camp. And you saw these kids standing up here and the way their lives are changed. We continue to host Bible studies. We feed people all these different things, and we've continued on through the years. And the work of God has been reflected over the years by these celebrations of these anniversaries. And you got to hear a medley of some of those songs from the years. I couldn't find programs for every anniversary celebration, but those were the ones that we had. And one of the things I also noticed was the themes over the years. One year was lift his praises. But then there was a consistent theme for many years of walking with Jesus or come walk with him. And this year, our anniversary committee said the theme for this year was trust, or trusting in the Lord, taken from Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And so I want us to think today where we are and where we're headed as individuals and as a congregation. And so if you've been attending Fruitland Covenant Church over this summer, we're taking a break today from the book of Revelation. We've been in a long study on that and these crazy images of dragons and beasts and trumpets and bowls and all that's going on. And so we're going to take something that in some ways may seem a little simpler, but it's no less challenging. No less a challenge as we think about what it looks like. It's a simple passage. You heard Ken read it earlier. Some of you may know the passage. Some of you may have even memorized that little part about trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he will make your path straight. And so there's this bit of wisdom. It comes from the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs sits in about the middle of our Bible. It's filled with these aphorisms, these little wise sayings. And so in some ways, it feels very different than other books of the Bible. Feels like just a bunch of little post-it notes, bunch of little 3x5 cards, a bunch of little wise sayings all stuck together. But it all comes together in some sense because it's all put together for one purpose. For helping us to be wise. For helping followers. It's written in the sense of the story of, in the format of a letter from a father to a son, but it's something that's relevant for all of us. And so one of the things we want to think about is when we talk about being wise or about wisdom, Tremper Longman talks about three dimensions to wisdom. One is the practical sense of wisdom. Things like emotional intelligence, personal skills, doing the right things at the right time. So part of wisdom is knowing when to talk and when not to talk. Part of wisdom is knowing how to understand people and read those signs. But another part of wisdom is ethical. What's the right thing to do? What does righteousness look like? What's moral? A wise person is an ethical person. But the third component, or the third dimension of wisdom, is theological. Because one of the things the book of Proverbs says is that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So all this talk about wisdom, all this talk about what a wise begins and is built on this idea about fearing God. And what is the fear of the Lord? So it's the recognition that God is greater than you. That it's a greatness that makes you pay attention and obey. And we could say a lot about fear of the Lord, but we're not talking about fear of the Lord today. What I want us to talk about is trusting in the Lord. So we're in chapter 3 of the book of Proverbs. Which means what comes before that? Chapters 1 and 2, right? So chapters 1 and 2 come before that. So although it's this book of Proverbs where it feels like just a mishmash of everything together, it feels like Solomon and the other people who put this together just kind of sat down and had a stream of consciousness day. And just wrote down like, oh, here's a little thing. Oh, and I heard somebody say this, and I heard somebody say this, and put it all together. But there is a collection to it. And so it's part of a context of this father addressing his son and words for all of us. And so chapter 3 begins where it says those lines, my son, do not forget my teaching. And so there's that language, but it goes on. It says, let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Does that sound like just external actions? No, it's about something going on inside of us. And it tells us that what the writer is getting at, or what Solomon is getting at, is something that goes on and deals with our hearts. But I want to focus on verses 5 and 6 of chapter 3. The focus. So, chapter 3, verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he will make your path straight. So trust. We have to begin with, what does that word mean? What does it mean to trust? And as I was thinking of trust, I thought of the Disney movie Aladdin. And so there's a scene in this movie with Aladdin where Aladdin has met Jasmine. Aladdin's the street rat. Jasmine is the princess from the castle who's out wandering the streets of the city. And they sort of get themselves in trouble and they're running through. And there's a moment. Okay, spoiler alert, the movie's really old, so I hope you've seen this one. But there's a scene in the movie where Aladdin and Jasmine are running through the streets of the city and they're caught by the king's guards. The king's guards are chasing because they want Jasmine back in the palace and they're chasing Aladdin because he's a thief. Neither of them know each other and don't know this about each other yet. And Aladdin looks at Jasmine and they get to the top of this big building and he reaches his hand out and he says, do you trust me? And she says, well, yeah. And he grabs her hand and they jump off this building. And sometimes that's what we think of as trust. Is this idea of belief without evidence. She had no reason to trust him at this moment. She just met this guy. He's a thief. He's running around. And he says, do you trust me? And that's often what we think of as trust. As kind of belief without evidence. But trust is something different when the Bible talks about it. Trust isn't a last resort. It's a steady relationship. Trust is an absolute dependence. And it's an absolute dependence that's based on prior history. And so we even have that same thought, that idea that comes in our English language. We think of trust in what is somebody who we can trust, somebody who's trustworthy. We have faith, somebody who's faithful. And so there's this sense of which the language works together. And so we put trust in God because God is trustworthy. We have faith in God because God is faithful. So when Solomon says, trust in the Lord, he's not asking a blind obedience. He's not asking you to jump off the edge of a building with a stranger. What he's asking you to do is to believe in someone that we know and we trust. And we learn that it's an absolute dependence because that other line where it says, in all your ways, submit to him. But there's a contrast there. It says, trust in the Lord. In case we're wondering, what does it look like to trust in the Lord? There's a contrast. The way it's written, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. It's an either or, and leaning on your understanding is this sense of putting your full weight on it. Imagine yourself standing on a high gorge and there's a fence that keeps you from falling over the edge. And you lean on the fence. You want to know what the fence is going to hold. That fence is strong. The fence won't let you down. So when it says trust in the Lord and lean not on your understanding, it's saying trust in God, put your full weight on him. Don't put your full weight on what you know. It's in this or that. It's not one of those like, well, trust in the Lord. And if that doesn't work out, then lean on your own understanding. Lean on your own understanding. If that doesn't quite work out, then trust in the Lord. It says, trust in the Lord and lean, what, not. Don't put it there because it's not going to work. So what we're going to think about is what trust looks like in the Lord. And it's made more clear by verse 6. It says, in all your ways, submit to him. So trusting has something to do with submitting to him. And so we read this. So I'm going to read those two verses again and see if you notice anything that stands out to you. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. In all your ways, submit to him. So what part of our life do we trust? What part of our life are we called to submit? All. Does it say, well, trust in the Lord with the stuff that happens on Sunday. Trust in the Lord with, no, trust in the Lord with all. And so it's clear that he says, and he will make your path straight. And we're going to come back to that about what that means to make our path straight. In short, what we could say about it is the course of our life will be successful. It's this sense of a metaphor path. So Proverbs draws this path. So he will make our path straight. So God will be with us and he'll walk with us. So it applies to all of life. And so what I want to do is think about some different ways what that might look like. Some different ways, and rather than trying to understand, what does it look like to trust in the Lord with all your heart? We'll think some as individuals and then some as a congregation, what that might look like. And recognize that each of us is on a different path. Each one of us has a unique life. But to think about it, to recognize, like, what would it look like to lean on your own understanding? Take, for example, the issue of money. Proverbs talks a lot about wealth and about money and about riches. And so if we were to think, what would it look like to lean on our own understanding of money? If I think about myself, my understanding of money comes from many different places. One is looking at my bank statement every month. And one of the sense of my own understanding of money is there's not enough of it. Or there's a limited supply of it, right? There's only so much to go around. And it feels like sometimes like, well, if I have more, then somebody else is going to have less. If I have less, somebody must have more. If I lean on my own understanding about money from what I hear from others or what I learn from the culture around us, is I need to look out for myself. I need to take care of myself. I need to provide for myself. Sometimes I need to accumulate. I need to hoard. I need to keep enough, because if I don't have enough, then what's going to happen? And now Proverbs talks about that. It talks about storing up. And that's where Proverbs gets hard. Because Proverbs are these sayings, but they're not absolutes. One writer says, he says it this way, and he says it carefully. He says, Proverbs aren't promises. And what he means by that is the sense of they're not meant to be taken as absolutes, because there are different situations that they go in. And so Tremper Longman uses the illustration. He says, talks about when he was a child and he went to his grandmother's house. And his grandmother was one of those women who, one of those people who had all these like little sayings that she uses. Most of us maybe know that kind of person. They just have all these little sayings that they're always spouting off and stuff. And so they're at grandma's house for Thanksgiving. And it's before the meal and everybody's getting in the meal and the kids are kind of in the kitchen, and grandma looks at the kids and says, too many cooks spoil the stew. In other words, what does she mean? Get out of the kitchen. We don't need your help, right? So then Thanksgiving dinner goes on. They have their Thanksgiving dinner. And after Thanksgiving dinner, Tremper is sitting out there with his brother and some of his cousins, I think, and they're watching TV. They're getting ready for the football game. And grandma comes out again. And grandma says, many hands make light work. Now Tremper says, I wish I had thought of at that moment to say, wait a minute, grandma, you said too many cooks spoil the stew. Because, well, which is it? Is it too many cooks or is it many hands make light work? It's both, isn't it? Because that's the nature of Proverbs. That's the nature of wisdom. Because part of it is with the book of Proverbs and wisdom is it not only teaching you wisdom, it requires you to be wise to know which one applies. And so even one of the most famous ones is in Proverbs chapter 26, verse 4 and 5. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him. Guess what verse 5 says? Answer a fool according to his own folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. So which do you do? Well, that's what I said. Wisdom is a practical sense. It's learning those things. And so when we talk about trusting in the Lord and leaning not on our own understanding, it's finding and determining those things. It's not just this absolute. I can't give you the formula for what it looks like. We can't lay out the formula and say, this is what it looks like. That's why it requires growth. Because although the book of Proverbs presents a wise and a foolish person, it's not a binary. We can grow in wisdom. We can get more wise over the years. Now, sometimes we may not feel like we're getting wiser, Sometimes we may feel like other people aren't getting any wiser. But we grow in wisdom. We grow in wisdom many different ways. And one of the fundamental ways we grow in wisdom is by making mistakes. By making errors along the way. Which is why oftentimes the people who are older are the ones we look to and say they're the ones with wisdom. Why? Because they've had a lot more time to make mistakes. But not always, right? Because it's not just making the mistakes, it's what? Learning from those mistakes. So as we think about trusting in the Lord and leaning not on our own understanding in terms of our money and our wealth, it's saying, what does it look like to trust in the Lord with our giving? It's giving the first and saying, when I get a paycheck, when I get my retirement, whatever I give, I'm going to give the first part of that to God because that's trust. I'm going to give generously. I'm going to give sacrificially. I'm going to give regularly. It doesn't seem like the way of the world. It doesn't seem to make sense because if I were to lean on my own understanding, I'd say, well, what I need to do first is invest in myself. What I need to do first is do this. But what it fails to recognize is we have a God who's a generous God and a God who calls us to trust. Now it's hard because we're taught to rely on ourselves, on our education, on our skills, on all the things we learn. So does our trust in the Lord mean we ignore all this? Does trust in the Lord mean, well, don't worry about how smart you are. Don't worry about the things you learn in school. Don't worry about this. No, it's absolutely not that. And so we sometimes think of, well, trust in the Lord is just this blind trust where we're not doing anything. And so I was thinking of when I lived in Sheboygan, there was another pastor there, Jim Curry. And Jim's dad had an accident. He had his neck in a neck brace. And so he was unable to turn his head. And one day I was talking to Pastor Jim and we were talking about it. And he said, yeah, my dad was just here a few minutes ago. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. And I looked at him, he walked in the door. I said, Dad, what are you doing here? And he said, well, I just came to visit you. And he said, well, how did you get here? And he said, well, I drove. And I said, Dad, but when you came to that T intersection at the end of our road, what did you do? You can't turn your head. He said, oh, I just prayed and trusted and pulled out. That's not Proverbs 3:5 here. It's okay to lean a little bit on your own understanding, recognize that that's not how trusting God works. And so we have to see it as not something simply that we don't eliminate all the things we learn. But the point is, those aren't our ultimate things. They help along the way. So I like this quote from Dominic Hernandez. He says this, in other words, trust in the Lord certainly does not eliminate our logic, schooling, and intellects as helps in our journey, but they do not guide us. They serve as more of a walking stick we use to help us walk while fending off potential pitfalls in the way of wisdom. In other words, all the things we learn, our schooling, our intellect, our experience, the things our parents teach us, we don't simply discard those and say, well, I'm just trusting in God. I just trust in the Lord. It's saying those are part of it, but God is our guide. Those other things, they're just a little bit of a walking stick to help us along the way. Trust is not blind. It's based on evidence. So the story of the Bible, what's the story of the Bible? That people are unfaithful, but God is faithful. And so we trust in a God who is faithful. We trust because he is trustworthy. We have faith because he is faithful. To trust in the Lord means believing what he says. Even when it doesn't make sense, it means believing what he says about human sexuality, that he has designed human sexuality to be one man, one woman in the context of marriage. Now, it may not make sense. We don't understand all the things going on, but what Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 is calling, say, we trust in him and not on our own understanding. We trust in him that this is the path he has given to us, and that will ultimately bring the greatest fulfillment, the greatest joy, not what we hear in other places. So we might ask, are there times we struggle to trust? Absolutely, you know. Do you ever struggle to trust? Yeah. It's hard sometimes to trust God because there are that times when you're looking at the situation, you say, well, I'm supposed to trust in God, but my mom has cancer. I'm supposed to trust in God, but I just lost my job. I'm supposed to trust in God, but my brother just passed away. I'm supposed to trust in God, but I can't get out of bed in the morning. My world has been turned upside down. My friends have abandoned me. My marriage is falling apart. My marriage isn't falling apart, it's an expression, okay? But there's this sense of where we're at, and we feel like, how can I trust God in a moment like that? We struggle, and then we remember. But you see, Proverbs doesn't sit alone, and that's why I said it's a context. It's a part of our Bible. We can't just stick Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 up on a refrigerator and say, this is the extent, this is the full picture of what it looks like to walk with God, because there are whole other books, one of them, the book of Psalms in the Bible, which is all about people who were going through hard times and calling on to trust the God. It was filled with people going through dark times, and they came to God with despair, with their questions, with their anger, with confusion. And God says, don't pretend everything's okay, that we're fine, but instead bring our tears, our cries of why, bring them all and trust God with it. Remembering his faithfulness in our life and in the lives of others. In some sense, what God is saying in the Psalms is to trust God is to cry out to him. So we trust with what? All, right? So we're going back to that. We would trust with all, and it's not just what we do, but how we do it. So it says in all your ways, submit to him. So it's not simply a matter of what we do, but how we do it. So we have a political season we're in the midst of, and we think about what it looks like to trust in God. One of the ways we trust in God is to realize the election is not the ultimate end. I mean, I've remembered 4 or 5 different elections, and every election is what? The most significant one in my lifetime, right? And the rhetoric kind of keeps getting amped up when this party comes in power, that party comes in power, it's going to be the end of America, cats and dogs living together, and it's going to be terrible. And what I would say is we trust in God, and it's also, and so one of the things to trust in God is to not give in to fear. One of the greatest things we do sometimes as Christians, we give in to fear, and fear causes us to do all sorts of things that we shouldn't be doing. So to trust in God is to recognize that God is in control. It may not feel like it, may not seem like it, but God is in control. Now, we may be concerned about issues. We may be concerned about immigration. We may be concerned about rising prices. We may be concerned about weird weather and racial tensions. But to trust in God means not allowing those fears and those concerns to drive our actions, to become the kind of actions that don't reflect well on the life of Jesus. Where we use hateful rhetoric, where we put people down, where we mock others, where we simply divide instead of uniting. To trust in the Lord means to love our neighbor as ourselves, to pray for those who persecute us instead of mocking them. It means that when the world tells us to punch back, we look at the life of Jesus who said to turn the other cheek. That's what it looks like to trust the Lord, because that doesn't seem like it'll work. And too often, particularly in politics, it's all about what works. And sometimes we think, well, the way of Jesus doesn't work. What do we mean by doesn't work? God doesn't say trust in the Lord and it will work. He says trust in the Lord. And so we're called to remind us to trust in him. The way we do things matter. Trusting the Lord means people being people of truth and integrity, even if it means losing, right? Because to trust in the Lord is to say, I'm going to trust in him, because what we have to do is realize there's a larger picture going on, that something else is happening. And to realize that when we trust in the Lord, and this is one of the other lessons we learned, trusting in the Lord, we went back to that verse. And so if you just simply read Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, it says, trust in the Lord in all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your path straight. And then it goes on, it says, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. So we might be tempted to read Proverbs and think, if we just trust in God, everything's going to be all okay. If that's what we think, I want to present to you a case study. Jesus. Jesus, does anybody here think Jesus didn't trust God? No, I mean, Jesus is the example, the author, the perfecter of our faith, the one we look to as the example of what it looks like to trust. Didn't have a house to live in. Betrayed by one of his friends, abandoned by his friends. put on a mock trial, crucified, shamed, killed. So sometimes trust, that's what trust looks like. It doesn't always mean that, but it's because we realize that there's this bigger picture going on. That there's a key to trusting in the Lord is perspective and a timeline. That Proverbs are partially realized in our experiences, but they can't and don't express the whole truth. And that's the problem. Sometimes we want to take this little thing out and it's like, oh, here's everything we know. If I trust in God, he'll make my path straight. He made Jesus' path straight. Jesus followed him and directed him, but it didn't mean that it was easier and there weren't challenges. But his trust in God led to his resurrection and his sitting at the right hand and being elevated and given the name above every other name. Because that trust also has this longer timeline of what's going on. Because when we talk about trust in the Lord, we're focusing on how it all turns out. It's not just about what happens today. So the way I trust with my money, the way I trust with my sexuality, the way I trust in my politics may not seem to work out in the here and now. It may not seem to work out next month. It may not seem to work out next year, at least from a human perspective. But when I put my trust in the Lord, my perspective isn't just on next week or on next year or 10 years from now. My perspective is one of eternity. My perspective is of what God calls us to. And this isn't just Proverbs, it's the whole Bible. That the story of the Bible is God making all things new, that there will be trouble in this life. So please, please don't walk away from this thinking, well, if I just trust in God, if I just give my trust to God, then everything's going to be okay. Or don't do the opposite and think, well, things aren't working out well in my life, so I must not be trusting. But what it is a call to do is to say, even when things aren't going well, the song we sang earlier, it said, even in the shadows, you remember the song, even in the shadows, what? I will trust in you. And it's the sense of when we're walking through those things that it will be made all right. So Bruce Waltke says it this way. He says, if one can live by sight in realized promises, in other words, if I know the promises are all coming to you, if I can live by sight, not by faith in God to fulfill them, why is there need to command trust in the Lord? He says, if one can live by sight and realize promises, not by faith in God to fulfill them, why is there need to command trust in the Lord? In other words, if we could see all the end, if it made all sense to us, why would he say trust in the Lord? Because part of that trust in the Lord is not knowing what's coming ahead. But though we don't know what's coming ahead, we do know something, and that's that God is faithful. And so we put those together. So let's think about the church as we kind of come to it. And so I think back, Harold Young. And so we can imagine maybe Harold Young back in the 1930s and 1940s. And there was an empty church building down on the corner here. A church that had started and then had closed. And I don't know the story, the history of that. And he was looking at that. Now to lean on human understanding might look and say, well, that church failed. God must not be doing anything here in this community. There's nothing going on. But instead, I don't know how God led him or what but he said, you know what? I'm going to trust in God and I'm going to start working. I'm going to gather together some other people. And we're going to get together and we're going to reach out to students in the area. And now he didn't know where that would go or where that would lead. But he trusted and he waited and it brought fruit. Or the Fruitland Mission Society, this group of mostly women who gathered together for at least 5 years before the church was even charted. And what they did every week, there was just the little minutes from each one is, here's some songs we sang, here's a scripture we did, and we prayed together. They did the basics. They met together, they sang together, they prayed together, they read the scripture together. What were they doing? They were trusting in the Lord. They were waiting on what God would do. And so as we look to the future as Fruitland Covenant Churches, we look from 75 years back and look to the future. We don't know how long that future will be. We don't know when Jesus will be back or what this will be look like. You know, how long this congregation will be here. But we can build on a picture of trust. And that may mean we have to redefine what it means to be successful. If success is even the word we should be using. Perhaps the word to use is, are we trusting? So what does it look like to trust? First of all, it's going to mean prayer and a whole lot of it. Because that's where it begins, because trust is where? Trust is in God. And so part of trusting in God is turning to him. It means all those other things are just walking sticks. All our church conferences, all the books we have, they're walking sticks. They can guide us, but we can't rely on those. And there's always the temptation when we sit in a council meeting or I sit with people and it's like, oh, we don't, you know, how do we reach more young people? How do we do this? And there's a temptation to grab the latest conference, the latest book, the latest thing the church down the street was doing. And those are helpful. They're walking sticks along the way. But ultimately what God is calling us to do is to trust in him. So it might mean that if we feel God calling us to do something, we will be patient and wait. Trusting in God means that we will say yes to what he calls us to do. I mean, there are clear things he calls us to do. He calls us to love our neighbors. He calls us to feed the poor. He calls us to bless those who persecute us. He calls us to love one another, to forgive one another. Those are things we have to be doing. That's what it looks like trusting the Lord. And it may not feel like the thing to do, but it's what God is calling us to do. But there may be something else that God is speaking to you and saying, I want you to do this for me. And you might look and you say, well, but that's never going to work. That's not the question to ask. The question to ask is, well, God, if God's calling you to do it, then you trust in him and see where it will lead. And we begin and where we end always with God, to trust and remember that trust begins by reminding ourselves that God is trustworthy. And so we remember the stories of the Bible that a man named Abraham was called to go to a land that he didn't know, and he trusted God. That a woman named Hannah was told by God that she was going to have a child, and in the midst of her challenges and difficulties, she trusted God. That a little boy named David faced off against a giant, and he put his trust in God. That a man named Stephen gave his testimony to God, and while he trusted in God, people were throwing stones at him and killing him. And that happened down through the ages, people like Antipas and Polycarp and Perpetua, people who put their trust in God, and it didn't always turn out perfectly well in this life. They were fed to lions, they were burned at the stake, they were crucified, they were dead, but they put their trust in God. And so what we needed, it's Adoniram Judson, who traveled to Burma because he felt called as a missionary 6 years before he saw the first person come to Jesus. But he trusted because he knew what God was calling him to do. And so that's us, is we need to read those stories. We need to remind ourselves of what it looks like to trust God, whether it's Abraham or Hannah or David or Stephen, or it's somebody from this church or somebody else you know, pictures of trusting God, and to know that in each case, they trust because they know a God who is trustworthy. That the one named Jesus is the author and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured shame on the cross because he trusted in God. So may we, Fruitland Covenant Church, as we look back and as we look forward, put our trust in God, knowing that he alone is the one who is trustworthy. Let us trust in the Lord and lean not on our own understanding. Amen.